podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 202 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It's fair to say it's not been a particularly Merry Christmas for Everton and us as fans. Since we last recorded, obviously, post-Spurs, which was a terrific performance in defeat and plenty of positives that we went over. Lost, obviously, to Man City, with no disgrace in that, in what was a good performance. But then I think yesterday, Wolves, the mind you alluded to it, and we think we'll all agree, the worst we played since Villa in the early part of the season, which is disappointing. And it's been a disappointing end to a month that promised a lot, really. You know, we went into the month, we got four wins on the spin. We had the Carabao Cup quarterfinal against Fulham, and then from that moment, really, it's gone a little bit downhill. But, you know, if you come out of the month with 12 points, I think we've all would have been quite satisfied before December started with the points total. So we've got to obviously take some kind of positives from the month of on the whole. But yesterday, Liam Molyneux, it was a really disappointing, below par, substandard, tired Everton performance, wasn't it?
I think your last word sums it up, mate. Players look flogged to death to me. They look flogged to death, and that was a game too far for us yesterday. Obviously, we always know December's a congested fixture list. Too congested, as far as I'm concerned. And that's not just being an Everton fan. I think in general, you've seen more injuries than ever, haven't we, in the Premier League this season. We've now got, like I said on the previous podcast, like a crazy break now where we've got two Premier League games in a month. Well, okay, scrap the winter break then. Why don't we just basically stagger those games across the 2 months and, you know, essentially try and get, you know, a better product out there, if you want to call it that, if you're referring to it as a football match or a Premier League or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, if people are tuning in to watch, or you're going to watch your own team, you want the best players on the pitch. But, you know, if those players aren't available because of injury, or the players are absolutely knackered because they're being flogged to death, and this is what happens, and the players look like that. They look dead on their feet yesterday. And I said to you after the game, it's funny, when you're winning games, you don't feel tired there. And I know that's a cliche, but it's so true. And the first four games of the season, first four games in December, we've won four on the spin, four clean sheets. The team looks solid. The team looks settled. We lose Decore, and that was a key injury for us. It's very, very similar to when we lost him to Spurs, when he got sent off against Spurs after Harry Kane went down like a sack of spuds. And then we never replaced him then, and it seems that way now. And whilst we've had some really good performances in these four defeats that we've had, if you include the cup on pens, that was, like I said, a bridge too far. And the players just looked absolutely dead against a team that have now won three on the spin. So they're obviously flying, you know, having had a little sticky spell before that, hadn't they? So it's, you know, they sort of had an opposite December to us Wolves in that respect, in that they've had a tough sort of time early doors and then won three on the spin. So, I was really gutted yesterday. But at the same time, I kind of saw it coming, and I think you'll probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think I said post-match, I think we were due a defeat of that nature in a way, because we've been so competitive for a long, long time over the course of this season. You know, even before this points deduction that everyone goes on about in terms of that being the key factor to our upturn in fortunes, it wasn't that, but obviously it's come along that same road. I think we were always going to, at some point, run out of a little bit of steam. You know, I don't like using fatigue as an excuse, but when you have a small squad like us, and when, you know, Sean Dyche as a manager plays, you know, the same players, sort of the same 12 or 13 players are the ones you will be used constantly. It does, and it can impact. And you know, we said after the game, you know, levels have dropped there. The players are well aware that they weren't on it. They'll know better than us in terms of the minds of the coaching staff and the players as to why that performance was what it was yesterday. But it didn't start particularly well. Me and Pete said, you know, it looks, you know, we're up against it. We're all over the place defensively. Obviously, we went with the five at the back again. Michael Keane came in for Andre Gomez. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, people said that was the formation that cost us. Most people before the game understood why we went with five at the back. When there's no Decore, people went, I can see why he's done that. And it's worked well at times in the past. You know, we look at Villa away was probably the best we played in that particular formation. But for whatever reason, it just didn't seem to work. And we looked defensively, especially, I thought we looked all over the place and we were getting beaten down both flanks, you know, with Mikalenko and Patterson pushing up higher with our three centre-halves behind them. We left gaps and we struggled to deal with obviously their attacks down both sides. And, it, you know, from early on, we could see it was going to be a bit disorganised. Went behind, you know, it was coming. Said at the time, it was definitely coming. But we were still in a game at that point. But the thing with me is we've spoken often about how many times Everton create chances during the game and good chances. Yesterday, not one shot on target. That was the real disappointing factor. Was okay, if you can see a goal or two, let's make sure that we're doing something at the other end. And we did nothing at all. You know, Bart, Dwight McNeil in the post from, say, 25, 30 yards out, it was nothing. You know, and that was the thing. It was the most un-Everton-like performance I've seen for a long, long time, because we've been treated to, you know, a great start of the month. Even in defeat, we've had some good performances. That just wasn't good enough. And like we say, we felt it might have been coming. We felt at some point that fatigue might catch up with this side. And yesterday was the day.
Yeah, we've regularly had over 20 shots in a lot of games this season. And particularly on that run, like I said, where we went 4 on the spin, 4 clean sheets. Even before the points deduction, we were hitting a bit of form, weren't we? Or we were playing well. The stats were showing we were right up there in terms of the best performers in the league. We were certainly up with Bournemouth and a couple of other teams. You know, we were right up there in terms of the form teams in the league as well. So they were all there for everyone to see. It wasn't just, you know, us fluking 1-0 wins or you know, getting outplayed and nicking a game. A lot of those games we deserved to win, and rightly so. But yeah, you're right. Dyche alluded to it afterwards, saying that was our worst performance since Villa. And I think it doesn't take a genius. I think everyone else would pretty much agree with that. But I think he's also, as much as we've praised him recently for the way he's handled things, he's been here now coming up to 12 months. The way he's handled adversity with the club, the way he's handled the circus that's going on around the club and still does to some extent. You know, we're still going through a sale at the minute. There's all sorts of noises about where this money's coming from, you know, everything else. The point deduction thrown in on top of that, the potential administration shouts. But then, you know, he's had to shelter all that away from the players, get on with, you know, what should be a game of football on the pitch. There's been so much noise around Everton, to use one of his phrases. And you have to applaud him, but then if you were to criticise him or be critical of him, it's his inability to sort of not change things, like, you know, when they need to be changed. And we've seen quite a few occasions of that since he's been Everton manager, and it's the same again yesterday. You just alluded to how he's used the same sort of 12, 13 players. I'd love to know the exact stats on, you know, the likes of minutes that McNeil's played, that the likes of minutes that Tarkowski's pretty much played every minute, hasn't he, in December. You know, Harrison is right up there for how many minutes he's played as well. He looks a fit lad, but again, he's been flogged to death. So I think Dyche has to be braver in some of these games. Like, particularly today was an opportunity for him to go, you know what, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to maybe, Coleman's now fit, I'm going to put him at right back. I might push Patterson further up because we know that he likes getting forward. I might put Dan Juma in the 10, you know, or put Dan Juma in from McNeil full stop playing off the left because he likes to come off the left. Or I might play, you know what, I might change it completely and go with DCL and Beto here. Or I might throw Chimiti in there or whatever, do you know what I mean? Because he could have, and as fans, if he'd have done that and just completely, you know, ripped it up and changed it, but still kept a relatively stable back four, which was doing well for us, but decided to maybe change elements of the front, you know, six or seven players, and we still would have lost 3-0. At least you could have turned around and go, you know what? I can see why he's done those changes, because some of these players were on their arses. But the fact that he's stuck with the same players pretty much nearly every single game after a really, you know, we were at the City game, mate. I mean, you watch the way City play, you're running around chasing shadows half the time. You know, I said it to you, it's almost like video game football, and it is, because everybody's in certain positions. The players, when they receive it, they know where the players are. It's pre-programmed football. Don't get me wrong, it's really effective and it's great to watch. You know, Rodri and Foden were absolutely world-class. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, they ran the game. And ultimately, when you look at the money that City spend and you look at the squad they've got, even with the players they've got out, they probably could still win the league. And they showed that when they played us the other day. And the worst game you could have, you know, when you're knackered is chasing shadows against City, anyway, when they have 70-odd possession of the, 70% possession of the ball. And like I said, I just wish it had been a few days later to give us a bit more rest. And I think we probably could have given Wolves a more competitive game.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. You know, and I think that, you know, the stubbornness of the manager is something which we've grown to, I was going to say understand, but we've just grown to get used to, really, haven't we? Because, you know, that's a game where, okay, we shifted formation. We've done it before, did against Burnley, if you remember. You know, we lost Mikalenko and we changed things up just before the game, and it worked. It worked well, but at times he is very stubborn in terms of his approach. And listen, it's to slag off the manager, because he's done terrifically well, as you just alluded to, in terms of, you know, he's operating in difficult circumstances. You know, we should be on 26 points. He's done, you know, brilliantly well in terms of the points that he's picked up this season, and some of those games that he's won. We've got great away form by the last two games. But his approach at times, you do think, well, yeah, you know, you've only got a smaller squad, but you've got players there, likes of you mentioned, obviously Beto, Dan Juma, obviously Coleman came back in. And by the way, when he came on, I thought he was terrific. I thought he's probably our man of the match, to be honest with you. I know there wasn't a lot of outstanding performances yesterday, if any. But the one player I thought who made some kind of difference and looked solid was Seamus Coleman. So you got him coming back in. So there are some players there that he could have brought in and changed things slightly. But he chose not to do that. But like I say, people sort of before the game understood it. It wasn't until, you know, those first 20, 25 minutes when you start to see us being well off it and us being cut open at will. You know, we could have easily been 2 or 3 down in the first half hour, to be honest. It's then you think that the manager has got to then look to react to the situation and say he could even change things in the first half. You know, if you've got to change formation, that then means you've got to take a centre half off, and then you've just got to do it. You can't afford to wait. But at half time at 1-0, we're still in the game. We're still in the game there. So even then, you know, look at your bench, look to change formation, and then look to bring on somebody else, you know, to make it our usual formation. And it didn't happen. You know, we could have brought Gomez on for Keane and put Gomez, you know, we saw how good he was against Spurs in that 10 role. Put him in the 10 role. You've got Garner and Onana as your midfield too then, and take Keane out of the situation. It didn't. And then it got to 2-0. And the game's done then. You know, we know the game's done. Everton have only picked up 1 point from losing position, I think, this season. So when we go behind, we know we struggle. So when it went to 2-0, and he then changes formation, and we then get, you know, we get Keane coming off, Patterson coming off, the game's gone at that particular point, and it's too late. And that's why we get frustrated at times, because we're thinking, well, be a bit more proactive. Don't just wait and wait and wait, you know, to go further behind. Let's try and, you know, at 1-0 down at half-time, we're in the game here to get something from the game. You know, let's do something positive. Like, you know, might as well have lost 3-0 by changing formation and personnel at half-time. I'm waiting to go 2-0 down. And like the manager said, you know, we then became a bit more open, and we lost the third goal. And it could have been worse. You know, they scored a fourth, which luckily from our own doing again, obviously Pickford made a mistake and he put the ball in the net. It could have been four if it wasn't for an offside. So you've got to think at times, you know, okay, we're 1-0 down. Let's go and do something a little bit different here and try and change the game, because it wasn't working. So at 0-0, at 1-0, it wasn't working. So do it sooner. You know, he knows more about football than we do, of course, but from the outside looking in, we just think at times, can we do something a bit different to impact this game and change it in our favour? And that's what really frustrates me at times. But, you know, I've got nothing but praise for the manager since he's come in. But, you know, you can still sort of say, you know, you got that wrong there today. As much as you've done well, you can still make mistakes.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I mean, he's matched Wolves, hasn't he, with three at the back. Now, Gomez, like you just rightly said, had a very, very good performance against Spurs when he came on. He had 60, 70 minutes, came on, and was the best player on the pitch. Right? He was outstanding. And then we were all like, this is the midfielder that we've needed here to link up the play. This is the midfielder that can spot a pass that others can't. You then roll into City, right, where you're not going to get any of the ball. And we said it before, this isn't a game, you said it more than me actually, this isn't a game that's going to suit Gomez because we're going to be doing lots of work without the ball. Lots of work. Now, if Idrissa Gueye was fit, I think Gomez would have been rested for the City game, if I'm honest, because you need those types of players, you know, who are prepared to put the hard yards in, close the spaces, close the angles, you know. And to be fair, on the whole, until Phil Foden scored, we pretty much limited them pretty well. I know Pickford made a couple of good saves in the first half. They're going to create chances because, you know, the quality they've got. But then you kind of, some fans, and you know, sitting by me as well, we're being critical of going, oh, here we go, one game wonder, Gomez and all that. Oh, hold on a minute, we're playing Man City, European champions, world champions, whatever that's worth, by the way. So, you know, you're not going to, if anything, I would have probably rather have rested Gomez in that game, almost gone five at the back maybe against City. And then, you know, even thrown in a bloody Chimiti in there and have given him 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Because it is almost like a free hit game. Sadly, we came out of that ground and all said the same thing, going, this is a sad indictment of modern Premier League football now, where you've got a team that's so far ahead of the majority of the league that you go to the game and it's boring. It's boring to watch because they're just basically knocking it round in their pre-organised formations and, you know, pre-organised patterns and, you know, engineered football, if you like. And you're just sitting there watching a team come to Goodison and hit about 780 passes. You know what I mean? The vast majority of them, little wall passes, just obviously waiting and baiting you to try and come out of your formation and so they can play it into the space. You know, and that wasn't a game for Andre Gomez. Wasn't a game for him at all. And then you bounce into Wolves, which is a far more winnable game, even though they're in form. And then you go, right, we're going to throw Michael Keane in. You know what I mean? And I don't want to make this all about Michael Keane because it wasn't solely his fault at all. The performance was there for all to see. As I said, the players look shot. But when you look at the stats, when Keane's played and when he hasn't played for us, it's absolutely damning, isn't it? It really is. You know, we kept four clean sheets in those games. You know, and Mykolenko then got injured, didn't he? And we lost Mykolenko for a few games. So part of that back four's been dismantled. We've had to change it. We've had to change it, and we, you know, and obviously Godfrey and Keane have come in and done a job against Burnley. Obviously, that was when we, you know, okay, we changed it then. It was effective against a relatively toothless Burnley side. Wolves are a different kettle of fish. They've got better players, and for me, he should have stuck with the. I think Keane destabilizes this back, well, five as it was yesterday, or three, or whatever you want to call it. He destabilizes it. Because he's got a mistake in him, hasn't he? He's got a mistake in him, and he doesn't inspire you with confidence whatsoever. You know, Branthwaite and Tarkowski have formed a brilliant partnership in the main this season, and they've been solid, and they know each other's games. They complement each other's games. Mykolenko's been one of our best players this season. I'd never thought I'd say that. Right back's been, you know, a mixture of players because of injuries and suspensions and everything else. But Patterson, yeah, while he can be a bit of a liability defensively sometimes, on the whole, I don't think he's as bad as some fans make out, by the way. So for me, the fact he's then brought Keane back in, dropped Gomez, because obviously trying to play three games in a week is probably going to be a big ask for the lad. He's just come back from an injury, hasn't played all season. But like you said, this is where top managers earn their crust and why they're top managers. We saw it several times with Carlo, didn't we? When he saw it wasn't working, bam, changed it. Changed it straight away. Changed the personnel. Changed the formation. And it didn't always work, but on the whole, you could see the game change. He should have literally gone at half time, whether they liked it or not. Keane, you're off. Andre, get your kit off. You know, get your top off. You're on. You know what I mean? And then literally get... I reckon look, I'm not saying it would have completely changed the game, but it would have given us more of a fighting chance to get a result in that match. And the fact during this spell as well, you know, we've not even seen at all any minutes for Chimiti, have we? Now, I know he's a young kid, and there's rumours that he might go out on loan, and that would be understandable. But again, you know, when the players have played this many minutes in a short space of time, get him on. In the minutes we have seen him, you said it yourself, he showed some neat touches. He's obviously very good technically. Get him on. I mean, there's an opportunity even yesterday at 2-0 to give him 20, 30 minutes, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I'm not saying the kid will suddenly dribble past five and put it in the top bin, but the point is, you know, he should have utilised more of the squad. It's not as if he's bringing on, you know, he's got 7 18-year-olds on the bench. You know, he has got some options on there, even though we are a very wafer-thin squad. I think, you know, if you are to be accusatory of Dyche, I would say that's what it is. He needs to be able to change things. He doesn't like change. He likes stability. He likes, you know, the same thing over and over again. But there's sometimes you've got to go, you know what? I should have just ripped it up and gone with this yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we understand he has tried and tested ways of approaching games. We get all that, of course. And like I say, you know, this back five worked against Burnley, and Michael Keane worked against Burnley. You know, he got man of the match. He got plaudits for his performance of coming in and playing that way and playing that well. He did well by all accounts. So it's one of those. I think the problem with Michael Keane is we said it before, very much a confidence player. Very much inconsistent as well. And it's hard for any player, by the way, who, if you're not playing regular football, being asked to come in from the cold and put in, you know, excellent performances week in, week out. And, you know, since that Burnley game, you know, the Fulham game in the Cup, sorry, when he played, obviously, after the Burnley game, it's in and out for Michael Keane, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? He's not starting week in, week out. So we've got to caveat things, you know, with his performance. But I take your points in terms of the fact that he's got a mistake in him, we know that. Does he destabilise things potentially? You know, we've played with four at the back so often this season. And, you know, a similar back four, you know, Mikalenko, Tarkowski, Brandtwaite, it's been Patterson or Young, hasn't it? You know, we've gone through a lot of games with that back four. But, you know, to dwell on the point too long, we still think that there was definitely manoeuvre there. And certainly room for the manager to make changes before the game started. But at an earlier point during the game, you know, give us a chance, and I mean, you know, might as well go out on our shield and get beat sort of 2 or 3 nil, as I say, with a change of formation and change of personnel earlier than what we saw.
Well, is the stats, Mike, and this will be some of this has been doing the rounds on Twitter, so a lot of people have seen them. But Dyche has had 38 games with us. In that time, when Keane has started, we've played 15, won 2, and lost 8. So, you know, 11 points from a possible 45. We've conceded 31, which is just over 2 a game. We've had 2 clean sheets in those 15 games with a win ratio of 13%. In the 23 games when he hasn't started, we've won 14. We conceded 25, which is just under 1 a game, 0.992. We've had 10 clean sheets and the win ratio jumps up to 60%. I mean, look, Sean is a stats man, isn't he? Or Dyche is a stats man, whatever you want to call him. He constantly citing stats. His team will know that, but you'd like to think they'd know that because he's all over it. He's constantly citing stuff like that. So, He, you know, that we're conceding more than 2 a game on average when he's played. Now, look, Michael Keane has been, you know, his Everton career has been so protracted. He's had some good games. He's had some absolute howlers. And for me, for a centre half, you can't afford to have that many bad games as he has. You're going to have bad games. It happens. You know, just like, you know, like Pickford had made a mistake the other day, his first one in ages. But it's going to happen. But the problem is, it just seems to happen far too often with him. You know, you saw that mess up with Tarkowski when they kicked the ball into each other, didn't they? Or he kicked it into you know, did we see any of that when Brandtwaite and him were playing? And Tarky were playing? I don't remember seeing it. All I remember seeing is that we just looked dead solid and barely had a mistake in us. And I just think he's obviously, we've said it before, he's got this blind loyalty to him. Now, we don't want to harp on about it too much, like we said, because we don't want to make this about him. But when you look at those stats, they're damning, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, stats are such a key part in a modern game. And, you know, every club uses them to the nth degree. That's just one of many. You know, like you say with the Corey, we haven't won a game without them, which is incredible, really. Which shows you how important some players are to us performing well and how important some players might be by not playing. But, you know, we could go on about that decision all day. But, to sort of finalise things in this section, it was sloppy. You look at all the goals that we conceded. You mentioned there the lack of communication with Tarkowski and Keane when, you know, Keane's hit the ball into him and things like that. The goals, you know, we're conceding from set pieces. You know, that's our bread and butter, that. It is our bread and butter. You know, we even cleared in the first corner, but then the ball comes back in, gets recycled, goes wide, comes in, and Pickford makes a great save for the first goal, and they stick the rebound in. You know, you look at the third goal, they hit it, and then Dawson just, you know, deflects it the other way, and it was all, like I said after the game, it was all sloppy. I don't even want to go into the goals in a great deal of detail, because we know they were terrible goals to concede. And they were all goals that we shouldn't really be conceding. But as well as physically, mental fatigue is just as much of a part in things, I would say. And it gets a little bit, you know, the players that are tired, it's the way it is. You know, we don't like to use those kind of excuses, but you can see it, you know. And you can't even say, I mean, when people say about, oh, they're not trying, only they know if they're trying or not. You can't, just because you think that so-and-so's trotting around the pitch and not putting any effort in, it could be many reasons as to why they can't perform at 100% level. And it could be a physical thing, it could be a mental thing, it could be just fatigue, the guy could be carrying an injury. There could be loads of reasons why. It doesn't mean they're not trying, but that could be the best that they can give on that particular day. You know, the players have put so much in, let's not forget that. You know, the players have been fighting adversity and come together, and we've been saying how galvanised this side is. You know, this is one bad game. This is what I'll end on. This is one bad game. We were great against Spurs, should have won the game, and bad officiating would have got a point. We did really well against City for the first sort of 50 minutes. We won 0 up, you know, good performance. The Fulham game and the Cup, we were the better side. We were a penalty kick away from winning that one and getting through there. And then before then, obviously, we've won those four games in December. So let's not forget how far this side have come. One bad performance doesn't define the side. As we said, we feel it was coming for whatever reason, whether it's a gut feeling, just knowing that, you know, even form sides can be beaten. You know, it can happen, and then we can ship a few goals. Everything no difference, you know, when we're not going to win every single game. It's always more disappointing when you see the level of performance and you think, you know what, we were well off it. Not one player yesterday came out of it, probably bar Coleman, with any kind of credit, in my opinion.
Let's not forget as well, like you just said, that we should be sitting on 26 points, whether we like it or not. Yeah. You know, which is it's a marked improvement on where we were when he came into the side. You know, our away form this season has been as good as it's been in a very long time. Do you know what I mean? So there's lots of positives. When we reflect on the year, there's lots of positives to be taken. It's been a really tough year on and off the pitch. But ultimately, one thing you cannot throw at this team now more recently is the lack of effort. Mm. You know, and that's what we were throwing at this team only what, 7, 8, 9 months ago, if not sooner. You know what I mean? So there's one thing you cannot throw against this side now is that they're working for each other. And like you said, it was a game too far yesterday. But we should be sitting on, what is it, 11th, 12th now after Chelsea won yesterday, which was good for us. We should never be saying that, by the way. We should be in and around, push on the edge of pushing for Europe. We should be. It's as simple and straightforward as that. We've won 8 games, haven't we? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it was a bridge too far, like we said, and we knew that was the case. One thing I wanted to mention to you quickly, and we did speak about this briefly yesterday, was, like I alluded to before, when you're winning games, you don't feel tired, right? You just don't. You're just riding that, the adrenaline, you're riding that positive energy, you're riding the wave, the fans are riding it with you. We went to the Fulham game, and it was a tough night. Like you've said before on a previous podcast, it was tough conditions. You know, ultimately, we went with the 5 at the back that night as well, didn't we? And we didn't play the best. We'd come off the back of a win against Burnley. We'd had a few players out, like we said. But ultimately, we were by far the better team. Without being spectacular, we were still the better team and we should have won in normal time. You know, they've scored a spawny, you know, own goal again. Keane scored an own goal. Bit of the Harry Maguire's about him in that respect. You know what I mean? You know, okay, look, he couldn't do anything about it, let's be honest. It was flashed across and it's just hit him and it's gone in. Right, fair enough. We've got a good equaliser in Beto. We then didn't have the presence of mind to slow the game down. We were a bit frantic after that. Goes to penalties. Again, in the penalty shootout. Arguably the better pens, weren't we? All our pens were dispatched brilliantly. Pickford nearly saved two or three of theirs. We've then got Onana to step up to put us in the semi-final. Is it too simplistic to say he scores that? We all go nuts. We go, you know, we break the hoodoo. We've only won once at Goodison in a penalty shootout since the 70s. We're in the semi-final. We've got an ounce, you know, we've got a chance now. We've got a chance of getting to Wembley to win a trophy. You've still got two tough games in Spurs, like you said, where we played well, and City. And you could lose those whether you're in, you know, win that game or not. But is it too simplistic to say that since that we missed that pen and we've gone out on pens, we've lost four games?
Yeah. You
know, we've got Onana grabbing his calf all of a sudden. People are going down injured. Yeah. What I'm saying is, you know, there's definitely some sort of mental aspect there where, you know, it's going to have an impact, isn't it? Because suddenly you've lost a game. You know, that stopped your momentum. It stopped the run of four wins we'd had in a row. You know, that would have been five wins in a row if you go through on pens. And then you bounce into the Spurs game. Now, we could still have lost that game, even though we were arguably the better side. And most Spurs fans agreed with that. But do you see where I'm coming from? Does that, you know, just one little moment? It's like any high-level sport. You know, you watch a high-level tennis match. One little moment, a net cord or any, you know what I mean? Anything, you know, a dubious decision by the whatever it is, it can swing a game, can't it? It can swing momentum completely. And I genuinely think that's had an impact, probably more than we would probably say.
I don't think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, these are the moments, aren't these? Seasons are built on moments. You know, we always go back to that time when Phil Neville threw a tackle on Ronaldo.
Yeah, high level sport. Yeah.
You know, and these are moments when momentum can shift. So whether it's a positive thing like that tackle, or in the case of us missing a penalty, stopping the momentum, you know, the fear of people were deflated, weren't they, just before Christmas, you know. And then you sort of then lose the play. I mean, to be fair, the players reacted really well against Spurs. We know they were terrific there. But I think you're right. I think does it go back to that moment? And this is not putting by the way all on Onana. Certainly not. It's just one of the. That's
no, anyone could have missed the pen. Anyone could have missed the pen. Yeah. It's the manner of the miss as well, which probably galled us the most, wasn't it?
Yeah, we know. You know, and he knows and all that. But you're right. You know, all of a sudden, you know, when you've got momentum and the fear goal factors around the club, the mood must be terrific around Finch Farm, and then all of a sudden, then like you say, little niggling things, little niggling injuries become a bigger problem. They start to impact performances when they weren't before. Then players' heads drop a little bit when they face a bit of adversity on the pitch. So of course, maybe it is. Maybe it is.
Well, they start feeling the fatigue now. Start feeling it more because we've won these games. You know what I mean? And it does happen that I reckon it. Well, of course it happens because when you're winning, like I said, you don't really, you know, that calf injury isn't there anymore, is it? You know what I mean? You don't really feel it as much. You know what I mean? And I just think it has had an impact definitely on our momentum bouncing into Christmas.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, the important thing is when you do get in a rut, which we are in now. Obviously, we've lost three and drawn one the last four. But then that draw effectively was a defeat because we're out of the cup. It's then how do you get out of it? Because the important thing is now is redressing the balance and how do we get out of it now? Next game coming up, obviously, quickly again, Thursday. Stupid day, stupid time. FA Cup third round against Crystal Palace. Horrendous for the away fans traveling down there, of course. We're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast as we discuss the upcoming third round FA Cup tie at Selhurst Park. As I said, Thursday night, awful, 8 o'clock. I think it's on ITV4, not even the real channel. It's just absolutely mental that this game is being picked for television, and you know, 4,000 Everton fans. And listen, good on them, traveling down there. You know, so soon into the new year, it's been a massively, obviously, expensive time with Christmas and New Year. and the number of games as well. Don't forget, because a lot of the away fans, who, you know, they go every other week. They're the same people. A few more obviously get to go because there's a bigger allocation for cup games. But it's an expensive time for them. And, you know, when Everton are performing, well, when we're not winning games, should I say, it could be a really, really long night. You know, as I say, it's a late game. You're travelling to London, trying to, you're not going to get back in till probably, what, 3-4 in the morning, maybe something like that. It's a long way to go on a Thursday night. But that's what Evertonians do. Of course, we know that. But we're playing a Crystal Palace side on, you know, on the back of a great win against Brentford. They've got all the key players back, so to speak. But don't forget, we went down there a few weeks ago and beat them. So we've got that in the back of our minds. We know we can go there and win the game. That's a really important thing. But Lee, what importance do you place on the game? Because speaking from an entirely selfish perspective as somebody who unfortunately isn't going to a game and will be somewhere in Cumbria when the game is on, I'm not really sort of thinking about it being massively important. I just want us to sort of get through it, give a few other players a bit of a chance and see what happens, as opposed, which is terrible because FA Cup day round, it's glamorous for me. It's always been really important, the FA Cup. We're in a situation where we've seen against Wolves, you know, how tired the players look. We know where we are in the league, of course, with only 1 point clear of the bottom three after our points deduction. But what importance are you placing on the match, if any at all?
It's such a tricky one, mate. When you told me the game was on Thursday, I couldn't believe it, if I'm honest. I really couldn't. The players need at least a week's rest now after everything they've been through. The congestion of games have been ridiculous. And like you said before, it affects us as a team and the teams like us who have got the smaller squads. It massively affects us. You know, this 7-sub rule now, isn't it? You know what I mean? Or 5-sub rule, sorry. Is it 5? 5.
5, yeah, 5.
5, sorry. 5-sub rule, not 7. It probably will be 7 next year. But anyway, it affects, you know, that gives teams like, you know, who've got those bigger squads, who've spent all this money, it allows them to rotate more. It allows them to affect games more. More, you know, it's clear as day that, and we knew that once the ruling was changed. And we go into this game now, and the Palace we played when we beat them are very different to the Palace now. I know Eze had come back, didn't he, when we beat them, and Eze was arguably one of the best players on the pitch when we played them. He gave us all sorts of problems. He then got an injury just after that, didn't he? And he's ended up missing the majority of games over Christmas. But then now him and Elise are back, and they're by far their best two players. And, you know, they've suddenly won 3 on the spin, I think, now. Is it 3 on the spin they've won, I think?
Well, they beat Brentford. They lost to Chelsea, don't forget, late on at Stamford Bridge. And they drew with Brighton, went away to City, came back from 2-0 down and drew 2-2. So the last 5 matches, it's actually been 2 defeats, 2 draws and a win. But what I would say, the defeats came against Liverpool and Chelsea. And obviously they've got 2 draws and a win. So they're always, with Palace, they're a competitive side. They're always in a match. Do you know what I mean? So quite easily, the Chelsea game, they could come away with a point. They were definitely in it against Liverpool. A late goal, wasn't it, which turned that game on its head. So they're a really competitive side, Palace. But as you're speaking there, Elise did pull up yesterday at the back end of the game and signaled to go off. So he's got to have a scan the early part of this week coming. So maybe that's one player who might come a little bit too soon for him. Who knows? No one else. He'll probably be back and score a hat-trick.
No, it's a good point to make, to be honest, because, you know, he's a lovely footballer. He's got great feet, lovely left foot. You know, he's a big reason they've picked up form, hasn't he? Him and Eze together, like I said, are a real threat. And, you know, he got 2 goals yesterday. Eze scored the other. They're a different team, and Hodgson will tell you that. Hodgson has always built teams off, you know, being hard to beat. A bedrock, and they've never, you know, when these two players are fit, they then carry a threat going the other way. When they're not fit, they're pretty average, aren't they? You know what I mean? They are pretty average, and you know, the key to their season is keeping them two as fit as possible. Now, if he is out that game, or he will get rested because they feel he may need to, then then it's a big plus for us because, like I said, him and Eze are a real handful. But like you said, night game, going down there, Everton fans brilliant, taking 4,000 again. But obviously on a midweek night, you know, it's an absolute joke in that respect, especially with all the problems we've got with travel and everything else. And yeah, it's not going to be an easy game whatsoever. This is the type of game now, isn't it, where you just wish you'd drawn like an easy game at home in the cup. Do you know what I mean? Like against a lower league side where you can rest a few players or even start Chimiti, couldn't you? Do you know what I mean? And a few other lads who've been on the fringes. And he may still do that. You know, I've got a feeling he might do that. I think he might bring Danjuma in. Well, I think he will play him off the left. He might bring Beto in. He might decide to go with 4-4-2 and play two forwards. You know what I mean? So I hope he does. I hope he doesn't just try and go in and play the same team that played yesterday or there or thereabouts and again push players to the max. Because, you know, the last thing we want now is someone like a Dwight McNeil who's been in decent form or even a Harrison or whatever, you know, suddenly to pull up with a hamstring and miss 4 or 5 weeks. You know, because we've seen the impact that has by losing a key player in Decore. So I hope he does change it. And I hope he does really mix it up and make 4 or 5 changes. You know, maybe he'll bring Godfrey in. Maybe he'll bring, I think he will bring Coleman in. Do you know what I mean? And you know, I just hope he does make those changes with a strong bench and a view to say, look, if we need to change it, let's change it. But let's not change it when we're 2-0 down.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'll be going in there making a rafter change, I've got to be honest with you. And this is the selfish me speaking here, you know, and I'm sure people who are travelling down there think differently, and I totally understand that, and I get it. I mean, either way, what you want to see is Everton put a performance in, and as long as you see that effort there and you see the players giving their all and being competitive, then you can't really argue. But the likes of Godfrey throwing it left-back, put Coleman right-back, Gomez in for Onana, give him a rest. Garner's probably a little bit fitter, should we say, at this moment in time, so you can keep him in there in that too. Not ideal, but listen, got to do what we've got to do. You know, likes of Timothy, Beto, Danjuma, get them all in. Just get them all in, you know, because we've got it. After this game, there's a 10-day break between the Palace game and then Aston Villa at Goodison. So we've got to use that then. Give the players a good sort of 2 or 3 days off and say, right, off you go. Go and have the Friday and the weekend with your families. Don't be doing anything. Relax, come back in. Rains to go on the Monday, obviously before the Villa game the following weekend, because it's been a busy time for all sides, of course, but some sides are better equipped to deal with these number of games than others, and we know what sides we're referring to. But it is what it is. This is modern day football, but I'd certainly be looking to make it, you know, quite a few changes, and like you say, have a strong bench. Let's see how well the players who are coming in can do. You know, but no, again, knowing Sean Dyche, he'll be thinking, well, we'll play for another 10 days. We'll go again with the same players. And I'd like to just go, you know, let's give Beto a start up front. As you say, Timothy, is it worth going 4-4-2? A little bit of a change up. Danjuma, you know, or even having Danjuma as the 10 behind Beto. You'll give that a try again after what we saw against Burnley in the Carabao Cup, and it didn't really work for him, but should have really got a goal. There's players there, Dobbin. Has come in, you know, we haven't seen him after that Chelsea goal. Give him a little go again, you know, what he can do. You know, there's players there who can come in, you know, getting Coleman back's a real bonus. Decore, keep him away from the side until the Villa game. You know, no point in risking him, just keep him away from things. So there are players there that can come in, I think, and do a job. And it's for those players to think, well, this is my chance. If the manager's giving me a go. Like, I know Godfrey's massively frustrated currently at his lack of playing time. Did well against Burnley, which we all saw, came in, had a really good game. But he's not getting the game time that he wants at the moment. But ideal time, I mean, if you're looking to sell him in January, you know, we've been linked to Spurs, then give him a little bit of game time as well, you know. So it's
that's the reason as well. Would you have played Godfrey ahead of Keane in some of these matches, mate? Bearing how well, obviously, both Keane and him, by the way, played well. Obviously Keane scored, didn't he? You know what I mean? Against Burnley. But would you have played Godfrey in there? Like, say yesterday, for example, again, look, Mateus Cunha is a player we were linked with. He ended up going for stupid money to Wolves in the end for 40 million, which is, you know, a crazy price. But the kid's a talent, isn't he? He's a talented kid. He caused us all sorts of problems yesterday. He's quick, he drives with the ball, you know, he can turn defence into attack very quickly. And, you know, he's got Huang who's hit a bit of form. you know, he's been one of their best players this season, for example, when we played them. You know, would you have played someone like a Godfrey in there then, who's more of an athlete against some of those fellas?
I think it's always, you look back with hindsight, don't you? And you think, well, what should we have done? I think Godfrey had done enough against Burnley to warrant being given another chance at some point. And in my opinion, no reason why, if you put him alongside Tarkowski and Brandtveit, there's a real solid two, you know, to be in there with. You play Tarkowski central, Godfrey right and Brandtveit left. That's really solid. And like you say, when you're against athletes, that's what Godfrey is, isn't he? He's an athlete. So it'd be much better for him against the likes of, you mentioned there, Huang and Cunha, those kind of players, as opposed to Keane. I mean, both Keane and Tarkowski got left behind for pace a couple of times yesterday. You know, they were literally like they were running with their cement in the boots. They were getting beaten far too easily. So Godfrey would have been a real option. A couple of times he warmed up because Tarkowski went down, didn't he? Had a bit of a niggle. I think Brandtveit went down as well. So he can count himself unlucky, I think. But I think Thursday will be a chance for him. I hope it is. You know, he does deserve, like any player, you know, he's been really patient. We know he struggled, and we've mentioned this time and time again, but he came in against Burnley after months in the cold and not really getting a go, did a really good job. So you're going to give Michael Keane a chance, which the man's just done now a few times since the Burnley game. Then give Godfrey a go as well. And I say, I think...
If I'm Godfrey, I'd be sitting there going, you know, Keane's come on here, and whilst we both played well against Burnley, he scored no goal in the cup. You know what I mean? Okay, on the whole, had an okay-ish game, didn't you know, not great, not bad. He then comes in again, and you know, he struggles a bit yesterday, you know, like a lot of the team did. But then if I'm thinking, why am I not getting a nod ahead of this lad here? Mm. You know what I mean? He's an athlete. He's up against Eze and potentially Elise. I would feel much more secure, even if he went with a back three, of Godfrey sprinting up against them, wouldn't you, than Keane? You know, yeah. If Elise is squaring you up, Godfrey's got far more chance of staying with him, hasn't he, than Keane has.
But I think as well, you know, not Godfrey probably feels exactly the same. As I say, the stories are that he is massively frustrated at the moment, and you can understand why, you know, because you are seeing other players. You know, you look at the back four. When Mikhailenko was injured, it was Ashley Young who was playing over there, wasn't it? He was getting a nod. Whereas Godfrey's played his best football at Everton as left-back. So why not give him a go? Do you know what I mean? He's an athlete. He can get up and down. He's got that pace. So we've seen, obviously, Young play left-back. He's seen Keane come in at centre-half and get more opportunities than him. He's obviously the right-hand side. You've seen Young, Coleman and Patterson. So we're quite covered there. But he deserves a chance, like any player. You know, if things aren't working, and we're in a little bit of a rut at the moment anyway for a variety of reasons, then you should always be keen to utilise other players, because especially if fatigue is a factor, which it quite clearly is, then give other players a go. No reason why. And I do think Thursday we'll see him. We'll see Coleman. I think we'll see Beto start the game because Dom has looked off for two or three games as well. I think we're definitely going to see changes there. And I just hope that, you know, post-Palace, we can then utilise that break before we obviously welcome an informed Villa side to Goodison.
Yeah, Dom's an interesting one at the minute. He really is. He was obviously rested in the week against City. You can understand that. Came on, had a little cameo. It's 9 games he's gone without scoring now. Whilst he's given us much more of a platform compared to what it was last year, and we look a better side for it with him in the team, he's obviously going to be feeling it now. He needs to start, you know, as soon as Decore's gone out of the team and he's been a big source of our goals, you know, as our number 9, he, whilst his overall game has been pretty good, he needs to be scoring, doesn't he? And he'll need to be scoring for himself, not just the team as well, just for his confidence. And, it wouldn't surprise me if Beto, if he carries on this form, I know Beto's not as easy on the eye and he doesn't hold the ball up as much. Having said that, though, he caused all sorts of problems for Akanji and the people like that against City. You know, backing in, winning fouls, just being a general nuisance. And I think, you know, he'll start against Palace, and he should get given a chance against Palace. How many changes he makes will remain to be seen. But the Dom conundrum's an interesting one at the minute, because the longer it goes, the more there'll be shouts for the likes of Beto to come in, won't there?
Yeah, they will, and you know, we know Dom has struggled for form. You know, in terms of goals, because I think, you know, his performances at times have been really good. He scored a great goal against Spurs that was disallowed wrongly, as we know. Lovely finish. Sometimes you need those things to go for you. Again, we talk about momentum. That's one for a striker where, you know, the longer you go without scoring, he hasn't scored since the West Ham game, the more it gets into your head and the more that you struggle. So we just need a goal. But Beto was a good option. We mentioned Chimiti deserves a chance, of course. But from what I've seen of him more recently, he's put a little bit of muscle on. He looks that bit stronger. You know, he's quick. He's good technically. So he deserves a chance as well. But this is the ideal game. This is the ideal game for me. You know, as long as you go out there and put a shift in, and the fans who've travelled all that way on a Thursday night, and then, you know, early in the new year, can say, you know what, they've had a go there. You know, then great. And anything can happen, because we've been down there a few weeks ago and we've won. So no fear. And it's tough for the players, you know, who do come in to let their minds, you know, listen, I'm ready and waiting. This is what I can do with the Billy game on the horizon as well. But let's finish off today's show with your prediction for the FA Cup game. What do you think, Lee?
Like I said, it depends. A lot of it depends. It literally hinges on what team we go with and how strong both teams go, really. I imagine Palace will want to keep, you know, the momentum going on the back of a good win against a very out of sorts Brentford team at the minute. It's a really tough one, mate. I fancy, as you know, I do fancy to get something. Is it replays or not? Is it pens?
No, there is replays. They're going to be scrapped next season, is my understanding, for third and fourth right. round replay. So there is a replay for this game, yeah.
I think it'll be a draw. I'm going to say 1-1.
I think it's a good prediction. I think it'll be a draw as well, to be honest with you. No result would surprise me. As I say, we shouldn't be going there fearing the worst. But I think a draw, yeah. I think I can see it being a draw. I don't really want one, because it's just another game in the calendar, really, isn't it? You know, with having a replay. But I think a draw as well. I'm going to say 2-2. I said 2-2 for the Spurs game, and it should have been. So I'm going to stick with 2-2 myself, and we'll see what happens there. But that's us for today. So all that's left to say for us is have a great new year, of course. It's been a difficult year for Everton. We've been through the mill. That continues, of course, but the future is certainly brighter. Thanks for listening. As I say, have a good night tonight. Have a good start to your new year. Let's hope Everton can start the new year with a win and progression in the FA Cup. And we will catch you ourselves next weekend to look back on that Palace game and look ahead to the visit of an in-form and very difficult Aston Villa side. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.